Welcome to the Cuban Family Roots Podcast, a monthly podcast dedicated to discussing Cuban history and ancestral roots. I'm your host, Aileen Vega, podcasting from Woodbridge, New Jersey. As a genealogy enthusiast, I created the Cuban Family Roots Podcast to help others in their genealogical journey. I conduct interviews with Cuban researchers and geneticists, authors, and those with knowledge and expertise in Cuban history and genealogical research. I'm committed to conducting interviews that will point to genealogical information and resources to lead family historians in the right path to finding their family roots. From 1492, when Columbus claimed the island for Spaniards, to present-day Cuban, our history has been rich and traumatic. Now our family history is slowly vanishing due to archival despair. Cubans inside and outside the island yearn to capture, learn our past, our origins, and our ancestral roots. Knowledge of our history is the key to keeping our Cuban family roots alive. I hope you enjoy listening to each episode as much as I enjoy producing them. The Cuban Family Roots Podcast can be heard on Spotify, Radio Public, Google Podcasts, and many other platforms. You can support us by simply listening and engaging. You're listening to the Cuban Family Roots Podcast. This is Episode 8. I'm your host, Aileen Vega, podcasting from Woodbridge, New Jersey. Today, we will discuss the history of El Conde de Jaruco. Did you know that in Cuba, there were approximately 10 count titles? Today, we're going to dive deeply into the story of El Conde de Jaruco. I will interview a family member of the descendants of El Conde de Jaruco, Ernesto Bustillo y Sotolongo. He'll provide information about his link to the Santa Cruz family and explain the history behind the noble titles, as well as why and how the 9 volumes of Historia de Familias Cubana were published. Historia de Familias Cubana is one of the greatest genealogy resources available to Cubans who are searching their family roots. Before we begin, we want to thank and recognize Irene Goigochea y Sanchez, cousin of the Counts, Conde de Santa Cruz de Jaruco, for her help with information to produce this podcast. Also, those who are no longer with us on Earth or in this country, like Dr. Rodolfo Sotolongo y Vila, third cousin of the Count of Santa Cruz de Jaruco. Joaquin Santa Cruz y Gogochea, sixth Count of Santa Cruz de Jaruco, and his brothers Pedro, Francisco, and also Mercedes, Maria de las Mercedes, who is Dr. Sotolongo's fourth cousin. And to his father, Francisco Javier, better known as Paco, Santa Cruz y Mayen, he was the fifth count of Santa Cruz de Jaruco, and for his eternal gratitude in making and starting the volumes. We'll be right back with the history of El Conde de Jaruco. The history of El Conde de Jaruco. On July 10, 1770, the Count of San Juan de Jaruco, a Spanish noble, was created with the previous Viscount of Santa Cruz by King Carlos III in favor of Gabriel Antonio Beltrán de Santa Cruz y Aranda, a lawyer of the royal councils, treasury prosecutor in Cuba, and founder of the city of San Juan de Jaruco in Cuba. Gabriel Antonio Beltrán de Santa Cruz y Aranda was the founder of Jaruco. Today, it is only referred to as Jaruco, which is located in Havana, to which the county was awarded for founding the city. The story goes that on October 6, 1752, the Council of Havana granted permission to the sisters Caterina and Bárbara Palancián en Catica to foster a population in the Jaruco Coro. Not being able to fulfill the commitments, the Jaruco Coro acquired Don Gabriel Beltrán de Santa Cruz y Aranda, who began the legal procedures to found a city and receive the title of Count. Originally, The city of Jaruco was named San Juan de Bautista de Jaruco. Later, San Juan de Jaruco, and now it is better known as simply Jaruco. The exact reason that Santa Cruz and the other founders chose Jaruco by name is unknown, but there are logical reasons that can be assumed. Jaruco, or Axaruco, was a Taino Indian named after a tribe called by the same name. The Axaruco tribe, which appears to be part of the Yucatan Indians, greatly assisted the Spanish between the Yucatan Peninsula and Cuba. The meaning of Axaruco is fresh water. That was also something very appropriate for the rivers and springs that were in this area of the province of Havana. It seems that when paying tribute to these, it was the most appropriate name, since to the north of Jaruco, it was where apparently the Spaniards came from Yucatan through the river of Jaruco. Now that river is part where it ends and is called the Boca de Jaruco. We'll be right back. The link between my guest and the Count of Jaruco. My guest, Ernesto Bustillo Sotolongo's grandfather, Dr. Rodolfo Teofilo Sotolongo y Vila, was the third cousin of the Santa Cruz y Mayen family, and of their ancestors, in particular, Francisco Javier, known as Paco, Santa Cruz y Mayen. Paco was born on August 7, 1889, and Dr. Rodolfo Teofilo Sotolongo y Vila on November 13, 1901. They had a 12-year difference. Although these two were third cousins and had a difference in age, a strong bond was maintained with Paco and his family. Because of this strong bond, Ernesto always thought that their relationship was closer to first cousins, because they acted like they were first cousins rather than third cousins. So much so that when Dr. Sotolongo left Cuba, he went to the Mexican embassy due to the contributions that the Santa Cruz family gave him. The Santa Cruz family had made this link to be able to leave Cuba and to be able to obtain certain documents through the Mexican embassy. Being a doctor, the new laws of the revolution did not allow him to go out with other family members at the beginning of the 60s, and he had to stay until 1964. He leaves through Mexico because that is where he received the visa. Dr. Sotolongo stays in Mexico for almost a year, and it is Mercedes and her family who helps him. The Santa Cruz family, as Dr. Sotolongo did, also used the embassy to get many genealogical documents out of Cuba. In the 2 years that Dr. Sotolongo stayed in Cuba, he spends time sending important family documents, photo albums, and so much family's genealogy. When he arrives in Mexico, Mercedes hands the document over to him personally. Today, Ernesto has this wealth of information thanks to his grandfather. The relationship between the Sotolongo and the Santa Cruz family comes through two sisters, Franchi Alfaro and Lemore, who marry the two men who bear fruit on the Santa Cruz and Sotolongo branches, respectively. Ernesto Bustillo y Sotolongo will be providing information about his link to the Santa Cruz family and explain the history behind the noble titles, as well as why and how the 9 volumes of Historia de Familia Cubana were published. We have to keep in mind that Historia de Familias Cubanas is one of the greatest Cuban genealogy resources available to Cubans who are searching their family roots. Before we begin with the interview, it is important to note that Leopoldo Cancio, a known Cancio family researcher, was also in contact with the Santa Cruz family. As seen in a published letter in the Hurtado de Mendoza, the letter mentions the offering of help from Mercedes Santa Cruz y Goygochea in Mexico to Leopoldo Cancio and relatives. This corroborates distinctively the spread of family and support the Santa Cruz family had towards others. Leopoldo Ocancio was one of the main researchers that helped supply information to the Santa Cruz family when building the Ocancio lineage. And we'll be right back with Ernesto Bustillo y Sotolongo. Ernesto, thank you for joining us in the Cuban Family Roots podcast to talk to us about El Conde de Jaruco. It's been a topic that I have always been very curious about, and I have questions for you for our listeners to understand who El Conde de Jaruco is and to understand the history. So first, if you can explain to our listeners, what is your link to El Conde de Jaruco?
So El Conde de Jaruco, the actual beginnings of the condado, and we'll talk about that, I'm sure, later, it comes way back when. But the Conde de Jaruco that we know of today, which is the one that started the genealogical processes, was Francisco Santa Cruz y Mayen, and he was known in the family as Paco. And he was third cousins with my grandfather. And although they were third cousins, they were very close. And they would always refer to each other as cousin or primo. My grandfather was the family doctor, both in Cuba and in Miami. And there was a strong link that we can discuss in terms of how the families helped each other and gathering of information for the books. And, you know, I think that there was a lot of credit that my grandfather would say that I think sometimes was more embellishment. But at the same time, I think that my grandfather was very proud of the friendship and kinship that he had with Paco. So,
okay, we know that your grandfather, he couldn't leave Cuba when everyone else was able to leave, so he had to stay behind. And during that time, that he was in Cuba, he spent a lot of time taking pictures, sending documents to that family in Mexico, I believe that cousin. Can you expand on that a bit, and why did he do this, and what was his end goal?
Yeah, so my grandfather was a doctor, a medical doctor, and during the beginnings of the revolution, the essential workers like doctors and nurses and the like were not allowed to leave right away with the rest of the family. So my family left in the early 60s. 162, and my grandfather was not able to leave with them during that time. But what my grandfather did through the Mexican embassy, thanks to the Santa Cruz family, and I'll get to that in a second, was basically ship all the documents and many, I'm not going to say the, so that our family documents or our line and family line documents, pictures and photo albums and everything, he would start sending them to Mexico through the Mexican embassy. And the reason for that was that Mercedes Meche, which is the daughter the sister of Paco, and she was the one that would receive all this stuff that in Mexico that our family was to send direct. During that time, as you know, the revolutionary time, early revolutionary times, they cut all the ties with the U.S. and with sending information and other documents out of Cuba. And so my grandfather was able to do that through the Mexican embassy. In fact, when he left Cuba, he left through the Mexican government. He was able to get his visa for 1964 when they started letting essential workers out of Cuba. And Meche, which is Mercedes Santa Cruz, was the one that actually helped my grandfather once he arrived in Mexico. And that was very key to our family's, I guess, relationship. Not only that they had a solid family bond in Cuba, but that bond continued while in exile. So that is, and thanks to them and thanks to the Mexican government, we and I have the photo albums and the documentation, our genealogical documentation that I've been able to trace very, very back, thanks to my grandfather doing that.
So, that's wonderful. Yeah. So that our listeners understand, there are two counts. One is El Conde de Jaruco, and the other is El Conde de Santa Cruz de Mopox. Can you explain the link between both of these condes?
Yeah, so to understand how these two get together, we have to treat the explanation sort of by distinction of the two. So there are actually, like you said, there are two different condados or counts that represent the Santa Cruz family. One was the Count of San Juan de Jaruco, which is a Spanish noble title created July 10th, 1770. And this was done by King Carlos III of Spain in favor or to Gabriel Antonio Beltrán de Santa Cruz y Aranda, which was the lawyer of the Consejos Reales, which was the royal councils. And so basically his duties were very key in the formation or the link between Spain's government, Spain's laws, and Cuba. So he played a very important role in making sure that there was that link between Spain and Cuba. And so having founded, and so this Gabriel Antonio Beltrán de Santa Cruz y Aranda founded the city of San Juan de Jaruco, which today is just known as Jaruco, but the story goes that on the dates, I believe it's October 6, 1752, the Havana Council granted permission to the sisters called Catalina and Barbara Palacian and Igatica to foster the population or start the population of Jaruco. And before that, that was only going to be known as San Juan or the city of San Juan. The Jaruco came after when Gabriel Antonio decided to name that extra layer. What happened was that these sisters were not able to fully commit the founding of Jaruco. And so Gabriel Antonio took it upon himself, since he had that link with a Spanish crown, to make sure that that founding of that city was completed. And so at first it was called San Juan Bautista de Jaruco, then just simply San Juan de Jaruco, and now, as we know, as Jaruco. So that was the first part of the count or the conde de San Juan de Jaruco. Then the other came later, and that was done by a descendant of Gabriel Antonio. Say that his name was Francisco Javier Beltrán y Santa Cruz y Montalvo. And this Francisco basically had a inkling or an understanding of what had happened in the past of his family and the Santa Cruz de Mopox, I guess, foundings of it. And so what he did was he went and looked into how this was done prior. And he found out that Juan Beltrán de Santa Cruz y Cárdenas, because of the Viscount and the understanding of marriages of aristocracy at the time, they went ahead and looked into what Francisco Javier Beltrán Santa Cruz y Montalvo was able to acquire. And so he looked back and basically what happened was that Joaquin Beltrán de Santa Cruz y Cárdenas had many titles. And Francisco Javier Beltrán de Santa Cruz y Montalvo was the second count of Santa Cruz and Mopox. And he wanted to make sure that Joaquin Beltrán de Santa Cruz y Cárdenas had put into place based on the information that they had received. And as you will know, or as you will find out, Santa Cruz de Mopox was based on an ancestor that was given a conquistador, or he went to Colombia and went to the city of Mompox and was given that right. And so then together, Joaquin Beltrán de Santa Cruz y Cárdenas went ahead and claimed that count name of Santa Cruz de Mompox in honor of his great-grandfather, Juan Santa Cruz y Gómez. Mm-hmm. So that is how that name came about.
Oh, interesting. So as I was reading, I saw that Juan Santa Cruz y Gómez was a converso and he was loyal to the crown. Can you tell us a bit about this?
Yeah, so during the time of the Spanish Inquisition and other times of conquest and other forms of individualisms, these Jewish and other denominations would claim faith, their loyalty to the Spanish crown because of their influence and how they would treat those individuals if you didn't convert. Well, Juan Santa Cruz's past ancestors and family was no different. So they basically were very loyal to the crown and they converted. And at that point, the Santa Cruz family was basically known as one of those families that were sort of like the knights in waiting and other loyal titles or royal titles that were given to them for the achievements of this family for the royal crown. So it wasn't, I'm sure at the beginning, I don't know, obviously none of us really would know what happened at the very beginning because nobody was there, but I'm sure that there must have been a lot of different reasons and rationales as to why they actually converted. But for this Santa Cruz family, it worked in their favor because they were treated as nobles and they were appointed noble titles and they did a lot of things for the Spanish crown.
Okay, and I know you mentioned something about Juan going to Colombia. So Juan goes to South America on an expedition, and very often, what's going on during this time period that he makes this trip?
So yeah, so Columbus, so after Columbus discovers the New World, for about 100 years after this this discovery, the Spanish crown starts sending many loyal leaders and explorers off to the New World. To found cities in the name of the Spanish crown. And as history dictates for the Santa Cruz family, South America was no exception. And Juan Santa Cruz y Gómez leads an expedition with others to claim parts of what is now Colombia. One of them is Santa Cruz de Mompox. And this was the area of Colombia that that he went to and claimed in the name of the Spanish crown.
That was my next question, but I'm not going to ask because you obviously explained it. So we know that there are two condados. Is there a blood link between the two?
So I think I sort of mentioned the two condados. So the two condados, there is a blood link from the standpoint that one was done during one generation, another one was done at another generation. And so these were actual just descendants of one another. And basically what happens is that what fortifies this blood link is that when Joaquin, that I mentioned before, Santa Cruz y Montalvo, marries or the parents marry each other, all right, the parents become now a strength or a stronger bond in the legacy of what we know of in terms of titles and aristocracy. So understand that Maria Teresa, which was Joaquin's mother, Montalvo y Ofarril, was the sister of the Montalvo type. And so when that marriage occurs, that blood link gets stronger. And understand that Joaquin's parents, so Maria Teresa his parents are cousins, and then when Joaquin marries Maria Teresa Montalvo, they themselves become even stronger in terms of the aristocracy and the titles and the blood link that exists. So from that standpoint, there is a double blood link. So it's not only the blood link from the Conde side, from the Count side, but it is also a bloodline of nobility and royalty for the descendants as they get married with each other.
Right. So as you explained, Juan marries Maria Teresa Montalvo y O'Farrell, who is from the Condado of Montalvo. So what authorities does these titles give him, if any?
So I don't think that at the time it wasn't so much authority. It was more prestige and money and aristocracy. I'm sure that there was a level of authority in the terms of what link they had with the Spanish crown and what link they have with the Cuban government. And the more respected you are within a system, the more authority the more respect they would be willing to give you over someone that may not have the title. So I think that's important to understand that it may not be authority or powers, but just the donning of having those titles gave you a certain level of authority just by default, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it sure does. Sure. Now, let's go back to discuss Francisco Javier Santa Cruz y Mayen Paco. He was a Conde number 7 de San Juan de Jaruco and also the Santa Cruz de Mopax. He has 2 titles, but these were not his only 2 titles. He had other merits. Can you talk to us about those?
Yeah, so Paco, the descendants and the predecessors of the Santa Cruz family within the Spanish and Cuban government continued. It wasn't purely, it didn't stop there. So when the Spanish or when the Cuban government gains independence from Spain, Paco and his family continues having these titles and these major government titles. And he was embajador in Cuba in La Orden de Malta. So he basically was the ambassador for Malta. He was the member of the Real Academia de Historia en España. So basically that meant that he was the key person that kept, or one of the key persons. I don't want to say he was the key person, but he was one of the main people that kept that history going for Spain in Cuba. And then due to the fact of his works with Cuban economics and Cuban government, he was always a member of different countries or different cities Sao Paulo, Mexico, Chile, Peru, Buenos Aires, Costa Rica, and others. And he just, he was one of those members of the economy of Cuba that stabilized that friendship. Or it's like today when we have the major major gatherings of different countries. At that time, there was a society called Sociedad Económica de Amigos del País de La Habana that he would actually be one of the main members that stabilized that economy between Cuba and other countries, mainly Latin American countries and cities. So,
okay, so going into genealogy, he winds up writing Historias de Familia Cubana, right? Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. So basically, there's two stories kind of that we share or that we have. One is a more personal, family-oriented one, and the other one is more of what we know out in the public. I think that the family one tells us of the uncertainty of what really, why he did it, right? And I think that what he wanted to do was to reclaim or to get the information back on the forefront of his family. One of the things that happened during Cuban independence, a lot of the Spanish titles were either lost or not followed through, because now Cuba was an independent country and Spain had sort of, I don't want to say severed ties, but they basically had not followed through with these titles and followed up from the Spanish royals side. And so Paco wanted to, at some level, regain that information to investigate his own family and look for this data to see what he could find, how he could recredit or family get the credit from the countship, how he had to, you know, go through it. Why was it annulled? Why was it taken away? You have to understand that for a period of about, I'm going to say 50 to 60 years, those titles were sort of lost. It was like, I think from 1895 to like 1952, if I'm not mistaken, those titles were just put to sleep. And it was Francisco, it was Paco that went ahead and looked to that and figured out how to regain that. And that time of period in Cuba was called the Realengo period, el periodo Realengo. And so that he, along with other condes and other condados, started petitioning the Spanish government to regain their condados. And it was not an easy task for many of them. During that time, you have to understand it was a Franco government. The Franco government was a socialistic regime, but it was not going to be very friendly to what these individuals from Cuba were proposing. However, he went ahead and was able to recover much of the data, the stories, and the information, and was able to present it to the Franco government and being able to be given the titles over again. So that is what happened from the family portion. By doing so, that opened a world of genealogy to Paco. And he had to go back, way back, into his family's history, genealogy, and other forms to be able to prove to the Spanish government that they were indeed Spanish, that all these individuals did in fact exist, and to make sure that they were in line with that information. And so that is a very personal account as to what the family has understood that to be. The second part to that is that by doing so, he summoned, and this is the one that more publicly is known, he summoned a lot of individuals for that information. He went to a lot of places, and partly that is where my grandfather and other cousins and other family members and other non-family members started contributing to these to his I guess goal or his su reto de familia, right? And that so his challenge, right? And by doing that, he reached out to so many different individuals that he then now had a bunch of genealogical information in his on his hands that he at some point finally said, all right, I'm going to publish this, because what am I going to do with this without, you know, so it was good for everyone. I guess that's the way they saw it, right? And so due to his relatives and others beginning to contribute and make the connections of the churches and registries and that kind of, you know, just putting everything down on paper. And I guess that is how Historia de Familias Cubanas began. And that is, it just started one volume after another volume after another volume. And 6 volumes were done in Cuba, 7, 8, and 9 were done out in the U.S. And, you know, and it's just an incredible work of, I mean, incredible information that was gathered during that time.
Yes. Know? As a matter of fact, I think in my first episode, I talk about Historias de Familia Cubana as one of the resources for people to look into if they're looking, you know, for information on their family. Very, very awesome, rich resource. Do you think there's going to be a number 10?
I don't know. There is a book that Ediciones Universal published, and it says somewhere on that insert that 10 may come. But it has never come, and I don't ever want to, you know, say that it will. The information is kept tight, I suppose, with the Echeverria family, and I guess that's all I can say. I don't know more than what I'm saying. You know, it's like I hope there is, and I hope there will be, but I really can't tell you.
Now, Francisco marries a woman who is the sister of Condesa de Buenavista. So these people keep on marrying other families with count titles, right?
Yeah, it was very common among the Cuban aristocracy and nobility to marry into these counts and condesas and condes. It's similar to like the British and Spanish royals, right? They all want to marry or keep marrying, or at that time, you know, people with nobility and people with the same social economic status. And it isn't until much later that starts sort of diluting. It's like now, right? So
right.
That we know of the British and the Spanish royals have just recently in the past, I don't know, 50, 60 years, where we've seen that they have married people that are not necessarily people with titles, right?
Right, common people.
But back at the time, it was not very well seen to marry a commoner, to not speak the same socioeconomic language, so to speak. Right. And you know, if you did marry someone outside of that realm, during that time, it was usually one that you would be banned, and you would be taken, you know, your rights away. And similar to what happened with Queen Elizabeth's uncle when he gave up the throne, he literally a woman that was divorced and was sort of, you know, undid all his duties. And so it was sort of that way, you know, the Spanish and Cuban royalty and Cuban aristocracy, sadly, followed that model for many, many years, you know.
That you know of, Ernesto, are how many count titles were there in Cuba?
Oh, my God. At least anywhere between 10 to 15 that I could probably name, or I could probably, you know, find. But understand that every time there's two things to that. Every time someone would found a city, right? So I went to Regla, right, in Cuba, and I founded Regla. Then I became El Condado de Regla, right? There was an official and an unofficial portion to that, right? And I'm not saying that there exists one for Regla. I'm just giving this out as an example, right?
Right.
The basic Condado de Regla would be understood to be that you founded that city. The unofficial portion was that it was not recognized by the Spanish government / Cuban government. It was just that you knew, or we knew, that you founded that city. Make sense? And right. So what happened was that for you to be recognized as a true condado or condesa, wherever Montalvo, Buenavista, you know, San Juan de Jaruco, etc., you had to have these documents and a whole slew of information so that you get those registered and that your family would actually be recognized as such.
Interesting. And my last question, because I'm just curious, and I'm sure a lot of people are curious, were the current Conde de San Juan de Jaruco and Conde de Mopox, and what you know, who bears that title today? Do they exist? Do they still exist?
Mercedes, like I said, married an Espinosa, Echevarria family, gentleman, and they have two boys. One is Francisco Javier Echevarria y Santa Cruz, and the other one is Pedro Echevarria y Santa Cruz. And what they did was they gave each of them one title. So up until that point, Meche's brother had, Joaquin had both, and Paco had both titles, right? But when Joaquin and so it went from, just so you understand it, once Paco or Santa Cruz y Mayen marries Goicochea, which is a lady, they have three children, actually four. They have Francisco Javier, Joaquin, Meche, the girl, and I believe Pedro is the other one. Anyway, so Francisco, the son, all right, has the title from 1956 to 1976. Until his death. Then that goes to his brother, Joaquin Santa Cruz y Goicochea, from 1978 to 97, all right, until his death. And then they give it to the nephews. So the San Juan de Jaruco title goes to Francisco Javier Echevarria y Santa Cruz, and the Santa Cruz de Mopox is given to the other nephew, Pedro Echevarria y Santa Cruz, which are Meche's children.
And they live today?
They do. They live in Mexico.
Okay.
So that is, those are the current counts that hold the titles today.
But these titles, I mean, how, like today, how much prestige or authority or do these titles bear today? Being that, you know, Cuba no longer is, because most everyone is in exile in, you know, mainly in the United States and other countries.
Yeah, that's a good question. I want to say, like, before, it's not that it's about authority or power, and I feel that
there's... No, more like prestige, you know.
Yeah, so I mean, there's a certain prestige just knowing that they have it, but if you don't do anything with the titles just stick with you or live with you, but it doesn't mean that you're going to do anything with the titles. They're sort of, I don't know how to explain, but it's sort of like in a vegetative state, right? They just sit there and they're just with you unless you do something. Okay, so the best example I can give you is Antonio Molina, which wrote the book of Y Mujeres en la Historia de Cuba. And he was the one that followed and had the one of his titles of like Porcayo de Figueroa and did many other different titles. And so what I'm getting at is that because he wrote this book and he was able to then use his influence as the I don't know how to explain it, but having the information of La Orden de Isabel la Católica, he did El Caballero de Malta. Remember, we talked about the Caballero de Malta before with
right.
La Cruz, right? So Molina, what he did was that he followed through that and used his influence to make sure that he was able to publish this and get information for the survival of the females in Cuba. So so I guess that my point to that is that the titles are with you, but if you don't do anything with them, they just sit there with you and do nothing.
And you can just pass them on to your descendants.
Correct. They usually go either to your descendant, to direct descendants, or to your nephews or nieces, etc.
Got you. Well, thank you so much, Ernesto. You have given myself and everyone who listens a little bit of enlightenment about the counts in Cuba. Now we can say we understand a little bit about this.
Yeah, my pleasure. And most of this information is out there on the web. So, I mean, anybody could always contact me, yes, but most of this stuff is out there, you know, for anybody to read and understand too.
And this concludes another episode of the Cuban Family Roots Podcast, episode 8 of El Conde de Jaruco. And we want to thank our guest, Ernesto Bustillo y Sotolongo. And remind our listeners to please subscribe. We're always working to improve and make our podcast better every time. If there's anything that you would like to add, please don't forget to contact us at CubanFamilyRootsPodcast@gmail.com. Don't forget, subscribe to our podcast. Thank you.